The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Well, I do like now, I mean, one thing's happened, I always enjoyed working from home when I could. So I enjoy working the weekends at night because maybe I want to take my daughter for a bike ride during the day.
Right.
So I used to love when I would send emails to clients at 10 o'clock at night to the associate. And they'd be like, you'll stop emailing us at 10 o'clock at night. You make us look bad. The great thing about COVID is people are like, well, don't give a shit anymore. Now it's like Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 o'clock. Everyone realizes that because so many more people work from home. They're seeing the fact that, listen, I control my own schedule. As long as, I always tell people, manage your employees' work, not their time. What do you care where they're doing?
Absolutely.
You gave them this work to. If they've met their checklist of work, what are you busting their chops for? The work's getting done.
Because now they're working to live when we also used to live to work.
Right. And as a manager, you should only be concerned with doing the work. So if it's just like when Johnny was in the office. Like Johnny leaves early on Friday, you're mad at him. I don't know. Did Johnny do all his work? Yeah, okay, then what are you mad at him for?
Right.
If Johnny has free time and he's made his calls, he's done his billable.
What does he need to be sitting in the office for if there's nothing
for him
to do?
And if he is, it's your fault. Give him, say, instead of making 10 calls a week, make 20 calls a week. Put that on him then. But don't get mad at him if he's met those points just because he's not doing it. So that's like I said to you before. Should I wear a suit today? I'm not wearing a suit. And work product is what matters. People get so caught up
in the thing.
And look at all the people leaving New York City. All my clients, like, I'm not keeping my office in the city.
Right. Why?
What am I paying that rent for? What am I having an office for? We don't have to be doing it here. That's just more money that I have to spend, that I have to increase my billable rate to my client. Now I reduce that. Now I can charge my
client. The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey, it's Bill Belmont. I am an investigative attorney. My firm is the Belmont Group. We are a New York-based national investigation firm providing investigations, due diligence, and crisis management to law firms and corporations.
All right, Bill. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I was a little disappointed you didn't wear a tuxedo this morning, but you know, you can't have everything, right?
Well, so if I could find where my suits are hidden somewhere, I would have put one
on. Yeah, they're all gone. I feel bad for my dry cleaner. You know, I have nothing to bring to him anymore. He only does wash now once a week because he doesn't have enough clothes.
But that's the thing, right? We're forgetting about those industries. We think it's the movie theaters and the gyms. And you're not realizing.
No, it's the little guys. Like the dry cleaners. Yeah. He relies on a busy economy where people going into the city and stuff.
Dressed up economy, you know, that type of economy.
I used to throw my pants in every week. I wear them a couple times now.
Even if you didn't do that, because I'm not really a dressed up guy, but even if you were going to to weddings or mitzvahs, sweet 16s.
Right. That adds to it.
You probably do that too. None of that stuff's happening either.
No. And you're cleaning a dress and cleaning a tuxedo is not cheap. So he gets some bigger ticket items.
I wear the same shirts and shorts every day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, you're a slob, so I don't know what to do about that.
But you look a slob, though.
All right. So I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I think that it's interesting because I don't know any that do investigations and stuff. You're an attorney like me. So we're going to talk about your business and what you do and what people can use you for. But why don't we go back to a little bit about your history, where you grew up and why you became a lawyer, all those types of things.
No, that's pretty interesting, actually. So born and raised on Long Island, always wanted to be a cop, even as a young kid.
Okay.
Like every little Jewish boy's dream wanted to grow up and be a cop.
Exactly.
It's funny. I got a brother who's a doctor, a lawyer, and the other one who's a venture guy.
Of course.
But I was just—I think TV had that influence on me. You know, okay. I kept watching those shows, and then there's something about the law that always interests me too. Okay. So as I got older, I'm not even sure how. I thought I'd end up in law school, but even my first job when I was 18 years old was to work for the local mayor doing some investigative work for them. Just my first summer job home. And then my summer jobs in college were working for a private investigator. I literally went through the Yellow Pages. For young people out there, the Yellow Pages book that actually had your name and address.
It's still online. I don't know if anybody's in it. You know, certainly don't take ads out, you know?
And I always remember the great trick about that was, even if my company was called the Belmont Group, for purposes of the Yellow Pages, you would list yourself as AAA.
I remember that. Right. So you'd be higher up in the list.
Right. They would look for investigative private, and they'd look the first names there. You wanted to be first.
Right. That was the original Google algorithm.
Right. That was the first SEO. That was the first
Engine
optimization.
Because you would see all these different industries. You'd be like, why are these companies called AAA, whatever?
Yeah,
that's why. Yeah, that's so funny.
So I always did that. A lot of investigations. Went off to college in D.C., worked for the U.S. attorney there. Worked a lot with the anti-crime cops down there. Enjoyed that. Was actually I was a summer cop in Wildwood, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's right near me.
Back in the day, and that was a great.
You wouldn't believe Rahway if you saw it now. The whole train station, the downtown's been all rebuilt and stuff.
Yeah, the whole thing is different.
Yeah.
I actually went and Google mapped the old house I stayed in back in like 87.
Still there?
It is, but it's renovated. I didn't recognize the outside. Someone must have changed the whole thing around. But that was a great. I actually have a picture here when I was on my ATV down at the beach in Wildwood that summer. So that was a big gig.
Yeah.
And then went to law school after that, Cardozo Law School.
Okay.
And my plan was to go to the FBI. So I had only worked for the, in law school, I worked for the NYPD. I worked for the New York State Integrity Commissions. Those were all my jobs.
Where'd you go to law school? In the city?
Cardozo.
Oh, yeah. I was at New York Law. So
Yeah, right there in same area.
Yeah, I think didn't Cardozo and New York Law have like a joint MBA program with like Baruch College or something like that? Where you could add like an extra year and get both. I know New York Law did. I thought Cardozo did too.
Yeah, I don't think Cardozo would have been slumming with New York Law.
No, with Baruch College. It had nothing to do with us.
Yeah, no. I don't know that. It was an MBA. If I wanted an MBA, I wouldn't have gone to law school.
Right, that's true.
So that was my plan. My whole plan was set. I was going to go to law school. Never been drunk. Never smoked a joint. I thought I was like the poster boy for the FBI. Yeah.
Wow. I know. Yeah. They do background check. They're like, this can't be right. You know? Exactly.
Right. And I'm realizing as I get older now, I could be the only guy in America that's never smoked a joint.
Yeah.
And but you know, that was
that
was my control issues. You know, I always wanted to be in control. So the idea of consuming anything that would alter me kind of threw me off. So
yeah, no, that's probably a good way to feel, right?
Yeah.
No mind altering drugs.
I agree. Cheap and short. And I also now remember how I used to have my motorcycle when I went to Cardozo. I lived on the Upper East Side and I didn't want to take the subway back and forth. So me and my buddy Mark, we said, you know, at first I thought I'd get like one of those scooters. Then as you start looking for scooters, like, let's go look at motorcycles. And before I know it, there I am taking a motorcycle into New York City and driving back and forth from Cardozo.
So it wasn't like you staying away from drugs because it was like dangerous activity, because riding the motorcycle is more dangerous.
Control. No.
Yeah.
I look back now, I had that bike up to like 120 miles per hour. It's funny.
The city?
No. In New York City, New York City was amazing because what you would do is you take your license plate and you Velcro it. And when you park on the sidewalk or anything, you take off your license plate.
Because somebody would steal it?
No, they couldn't give you a ticket because they couldn't. They'd have to go off the VIN, and the VIN was in a tough spot to get. So, you know, little tricks like that. You had to
nice.
It's the best way to get around the city. My wife and I used to, when we were dating, we'd go around the Central Park when it was closed. You can go anywhere in the city, the FDR Drive, the West Side Highway. It's just a beautiful way to see the city.
Yeah, because you can get places a car can't get.
Get places, and at night it was great. I mean, that was back before, you know, the mayor destroyed New York City, and it was a place where people wanted to go. So
yeah.
Those days will be back.
Yeah, so, right.
I digress.
Okay.
Yearn for those days.
But I guess that won't work with a car, though. If I had my license plate in Velcro, I took it off. You can see the VIN number right through the windshield.
But nobody's going to New York anymore. But yeah, the motorcycle was the way to see New York City. It really was. It was an unbelievable thing. And now, of course, I have the whole bike stuff. So that city bike was a great. Who knows if they had city bike? Maybe I never would have bothered.
I don't know. You come to New York City, right? You're a tourist. I'm not going to drive a bicycle down the street in New York City. You got to be nuts. Oh. I understand a motorcycle. At least you're moving, right? Somebody wipes it, you're done.
Well, it depends where that tourist is from.
No. I guess, but could you imagine somebody out of town? They don't know anything about the big city and they're riding their city bike down Third Avenue.
No, I think it's a great way to go.
Listen, I guess they, you know what? Ignorance is bliss. They probably are not afraid. They don't think it's any big deal.
I went to Boston or Philly, you know, or LA. I'd love to take a bike to, you know, go around and see the place like
but
that.
But you're a New Yorker.
Yeah, but New York's more congested. New York, it's not congested because New York, you can get everywhere by bike. You know, that city bike plan really enables you to do that. You just got to know where you're going.
So. Yeah, that's true. Everything's on a grid. That's
right. Okay. It's actually simpler than people think. For all you people not listening to us and you're not in New York, trust me, it's very simple. It's just a grid.
Yep, pretty much.
West, 1 through 125.
So you get to the south end. Then it gets a little confusing. Yeah, even that's not so bad.
About the house, and she's very confusing.
Right, but nowadays with a phone, you can
get
anywhere.
I do it too.
And Waze will Google will walk you there.
Google walk you. They have Google walk you. It's amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it's funny. You know, now that you say, when I was in law school, my job was I was a processor. But I didn't have to do like the personal service because you got into those conflicts with people. I would all do like the ones we dropped off at office buildings and medical offices.
Right, at the front desk great. Or something.
So I had the motorcycle. So that's really how I got to see all five boroughs because I go everywhere. And I made more money. I think they gave me like 25 cents a mile. So I made more money on the money per mile than it was in my hourly rate. But I remember having the map on my tank, and it was the page map. So every two stops, you have to change
like the Hagstrom maps, right?
And I have to remember where I'm going. Now each phone just look at your phone the whole time. But,
and doesn't New York have that rule, nail it and mail it? Like if you get there, there's nobody there, you can nail it to
now
the building.
Now I think you can go once, and then if they're not,
then you can mail it to them, right?
Mail it and so forth. So and maybe I should expand my business offerings to do more
service.
Think about it. We should offer some more process
service. Sure. Yeah.
It's litigation. It's a recession proof.
Yeah. Well, not really. You get a pandemic, the courts close down. There's nothing to serve.
Yeah. But you will be. Can't say that.
Yeah.
Long.
No,
now,
you're
now,
right.
Listen, now, we never had a pandemic before. So now it happens again. You just switch to remote and you
understand. We'll be ready. Yeah. Exactly.
Still got to do depositions. Still got to have discovery.
Yep. Absolutely. Mediation, arbitrations. Okay. So you were always in this kind of business, right?
Only job I applied for was the FBI. So in April of 91, I finished the year-long process. It was in great shape back in the day as a young guy. I went to Governor's Island, completed the test, and I was actually offered the job to go to the FBI, which is something I had really pursued my whole life. Only job I applied for in law school. But when I got the test on Governor's Island, I said, wait a minute, guys, I'm taking the bar exam in 2 months, and I want to pass the bar. They said, no problem. Just, you know, we'll defer you to the fall.
Now, FBI is what? Quantico you have to go to? Or?
Yes, Quantico.
Yeah, serious shit.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. That was,
and you have to go through boot camp too as a.
Well, it's funny now they have their own. No, you have Quantico, which is their own version of that. But it's funny when I was in law school, the other place I thought about going was maybe to go through
the Jag Corps
to be the Jag Corps.
Yeah,
they actually send you off to the island first for training there too. But whatever, that's my path I chose. That summer of 91, we had a recession. I got a letter that said they had a hiring freeze.
So you were going to get hired. You deferred it.
I was hired. I had a class in April. I deferred it till after the summer.
And then they got hiring freeze.
But I thought this was great. So now I know I got a job waiting. I got 6 months to do what I want. So I do investigations. I got my teaching, substitute teaching license from the Board of Ed in New York.
Okay.
Started teaching in the South Bronx. I think it was PS 31, Eastside Middle School, another school up in the Barrio area. So I was loving that, teaching all the time. I love teaching, love working with the kids.
Okay.
But now all of a sudden, 3 months turned to 6 months to 9 months. It didn't open up yet. Like, what am I going to do now? So now I started applying for jobs. I applied to the Mesa Police Department and to the Bronx DA's office.
Okay.
Now, everybody in my life thought I was going to take the Bronx DA job, which I ended up not taking, to go out to be a cop in Mesa, Arizona. Now, I got to explain the Mesa, Arizona.
Well, what the hell?
So when I worked in D.C., I was in the OSADEF, which was the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force for the U.S. Attorney's Office. I interned there.
Okay.
The U.S. attorney I worked for, who was a mentor to me as a young college kid.
This is like in a summer you did the internship or?
No, this is why I was a student at GW. So I went to Bucknell, played lacrosse at Bucknell, transferred into D.C. to go to GW to work at U.S. Attorney's Office.
Got it.
This guy I worked for, this assistant U.S. attorney, was a went to Vanderbilt Law School, became a Nashville cop, one of the few people that got their law degree first, became a Nashville cop and then a U.S. attorney. So I had interned for him when I was in D.C.
Okay.
He knew I wanted to be a cop also. He had transferred to Phoenix and said, listen, while you're waiting for the FBI, why don't you come out here and be a cop? So I went out there, applied, became a cop in Mesa, Arizona. After about a year or so,
Mesa, you don't have to go like to the police academy or something?
I did. Actually, the Mesa used to have you go through the Phoenix Police Academy. I was in there first, the police academy class. So Mesa Police Academy 1 was me back in like 94, 95. I'm trying to rehash this, you know, bring up my whole life history.
Yeah, well,
you know. Back there, went out there, had a great time being out there. Then soon afterwards, a year and a half later, the FBI started hiring again. I took the first part of the test. I wanted to come back through New York, so I came back through New York to finish it. At that point, they had changed the hiring criteria. I no longer qualified. So my first acceptance was no longer valid because of the new criteria they changed due to some lawsuits that took place, allegedly. That
part of shit.
So now, had I had consistent work experience from the graduation of law school until then, had I been a cop for 3 years, a DA for 3 years, it wouldn't have been an issue. But I no longer met that 3-year criteria because of the jumble nature of what I did. But I was all right with it at that point. I got a lot out of my system. You know, I had caught a bank robber when I was out there. I got to drive really
fast.
Was
Mesa a big police force or
it's
not?
It's the
really?
Second biggest city outside of Phoenix. So it's a big time. It's growing thing. Phoenix, okay. That whole area is growing.
Very yeah, no, I know a lot of, yeah.
Beautiful out there.
My sister went to ASU.
Yeah, so a lot of guys I went out there. A lot of my buddies are still there. Just a great department. Taught me a great deal too, actually. Just the academy alone taught me a great deal about a lot of things that were important in life. And so came back, started doing investigations again, figuring out what I was going to do. And then a buddy of mine, we were in Central Park, and somebody said, hey, you know, we're looking to hire lawyers. And I went in-house for Liberty Mutual to be a trial lawyer, which I love trying cases.
All defense work, right?
All defense work.
Yeah.
And as I was doing that, though, I still got calls from people to do investigations.
On the side.
On the side. So I would handle fraud cases for Liberty Mutual, and then I went to an outside firm to do work for them also. And I just figured, you know what? Maybe the thing to do in life, you know, now is getting married.
Did you have your own investigations license at that point?
No, I had worked for other people.
So you're just doing work for other companies that had extra work.
Right. And
got
then I'm getting calls while I'm a lawyer. I'm thinking, you know what? Now I'm getting married. Now I got to start worrying about making a dollar. I'm thinking, you know, how do you do that? You know, I thought I was going to be a cop my whole life. Now I'm thinking, well, maybe let's give this a shot. Maybe I got to try to see if I go where I can make it rain more so. And I love trying cases. And maybe if I was more patient.
Yeah, some people like it. I don't like it. But some people love it.
Oh yeah, it's extremely entertaining. The there's nothing like when you're trying to speak to someone objectively, right? So you have your jury in front of you, one side's arguing with you're arguing the other, and they're supposed to just sit there stoic, right?
And that's the jury.
Okay. No, you can't see anything on their faces.
Right.
And as I'm talking to them, I'm starting to do my closing, I'm going through, and I'm just looking at them. All of a sudden, as you're explaining it to them, they just start nodding their head like in agreement of what you're doing.
Right. Then you know you got them.
It's like, now that must mean what it's like to be a comedian or a rock star or something.
I guess.
But
lot of the cases, though, Bill, you worked on for the insurance, but a lot of them settle, though, right? They don't go to trial.
Oh, no, yeah. I do like trying cases. I only tried, I think.
So they would give you the trials?
I would try to get the trials. I hated doing the paperwork. But there's some people that love doing the paperwork.
Yeah, so no, I know.
You know, they're like, hey, I'll do your emotion. You go do my deposition.
I just thought insurance companies, mostly they want to settle, right?
I would say,
they again, subrogate and stuff.
Being that I still do investigations of all aspects, I'd say all cases I have 99% all settled.
Yeah.
So that's where they all go. But then, you know, the ones that have to be tried have to be tried. That's the reason why not every lawyer has to be a trial lawyer, because so many don't really go that far.
Yeah. I know a guy who does PI work, I guess, and he only does trials. So if you're a PI attorney, you don't want to do trials. You'll negotiate. If you can't settle it, you send it over to Tony. He'll take it over.
Right. Right. So they call those guys gunslingers. So I came this close before I left to do that with a buddy of mine. So we were thinking, let's just be trial attorneys. Firms hire you. If they can't settle the case, you get a piece of their commission, a piece of their.
Just go in there with a big gun, right?
Right. And do that. And that's and just go from case to case. That's a certain person. In the end, I don't know if I would have been able to continue to do that from case to case to case. But some guys, I became so obsessive and have such an obsessive personality. When you're working up a case, you never know when to stop. That's the problem with trial work. Litigation is different. Litigation is in preparation of that, but trial work is actually the trial work. It's obsessive. You've never worked on it enough. You've never done enough preparation for it. So so I did that for a while, applied to all the big firms, went to work for Pinkerton Consulting and Investigations.
Okay.
Out of New York, director of operations.
Yeah, Pinkerton's big, aren't they?
They are, but they got bought by Securitas. And Securitas switched over the name from Pinkerton to Securitas.
So now Pinkerton doesn't exist anymore?
It does in their consulting investigations.
Okay, because I thought I've heard it around. Okay.
Right. But I mean, it was huge. But they switched over. I was there for 3 years, director of operations. They ended up closing their New York office. And now I'm like, what am I going to do? I gave this a shot. I learned a great deal from them. I was there for 3 years. So a lot of my law buddies were like, listen, take space in our office, do what you want. A lot of my financial buddies, the hedge funds, Wall Street guys, like, listen, we'll back you. What ideas do you have? We'll back you.
What year is this?
This is now 16 years ago.
So it was after 9/11. Okay.
Yeah. So I was down there in 9/11. That's a whole nother story.
So 16. So it was like 04, roughly.
Right. 04. Right. It was 04. So 04, I'm like, what am I going to do? I think I got my son's two. My wife's pregnant with my daughter. You know, I got laid off. You know, I had really nothing coming in. I'm like, you know, what am I going to do?
Got to pay the bills, right?
Right. So this stands to the adage in life that sometimes the most important decisions in life are ones that are made for you.
Sometimes.
So I, because I'm, you know, 16 years later, it's the best decision that ever happened to me. So I said to my buddies, listen, I don't need the office space and I don't really need your backing. What I'd like is your Rolodex. Again, for you young people out there, the Rolodex.
Right. Do you have one to show?
We had business cards and the
you Rolodex. Actually, yeah. It was a big wheel. I knew this guy. He was a CPA. They were a big marketing firm. And in his office, he had four of those big wheels.
Right.
Full. You can't. Can you buy one now? Is Rolodex even in business anymore?
And you can't even organize. Is that light behind me bothering you?
No.
The great thing was about the Rolodex was when you got someone's business card, you would write on the back of it, you know, you're like, you know, November 1st, 2020, Mitch, and right. You write the notes
make
about
notes. It. Too. Exactly.
Right. So I always gave that advice.
It was the early days of a database. We didn't
right.
Have.
Correct. And now on the iPhone, under contact, you put that reminder down. So
you can do that now. Calls you up. Exactly.
So I said to those guys, listen, I'm going to give this thing a shot myself. And it's funny too, like my buddies, when I worked at a different firm, wouldn't send me work, but when my name's on the door, then all of a sudden they started sending me work. So just
interesting.
Hustled. Yeah. Just hustled and humped. And 16 years later, it's been very successful. It's worked out well. And I realized too, it's about, and again, more advice I give to young attorneys and young college students that are graduating is people send you work because they like you.
Of course. Because
they trust you and they like you. Obviously, they have to trust you and they're not going to send you work. They're not going to send you work if you're a knucklehead and take a chance of messing up.
But, right, and embarrass them, of course.
Right.
Of course.
So the key to life is just being gracious yourself to people. Be a good guy, a good gal when you're doing the work. Be fair and it works out.
So do you practice any law now? I mean.
No, what happened was I got so good at it, I just stopped practicing.
Yeah, it's like I got to give it. That's not fair to the other people.
It's not fair at some point.
Just, you know, they can't win.
I'm still an attorney. I would say my practice is investigations and due diligence.
Okay. So you keep up your CLE like I do and all the bullshit.
Yeah. And I do actually a lot of CLE presentations also.
Right. Sure. Because get you in front of the other lawyers, right?
Right. So it's actually called the use of investigators in litigation matters. So I can come in and give, we do work all over the country, but I can only do the CLE for credit in New York, although others have me do it just for the educational function of it.
Right.
But like I said, it's great to come in and you educate some attorneys on what due diligence entails and how you use investigators, what's surveillance about, what do you consider when you're doing surveillance. So any of you listeners out there,
yeah,
like the CLE presentation, contact me.
You're available.
It's a great, what a better way of getting in front of people. You don't have to promote yourself. You just educate them on something. They find it interesting. And that's the best way to promote yourself. Don't pitch
Plus
yourself.
It's an interesting topic. A lot of our CLE stuff is boring.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to go. I got to do my estate planning. So nobody wants to go listen to the estate planning seminar for the day, but I get eight right. credits. So I go. And the funny thing is you get this panel of like six or eight people up in the front that are at the top end of the estate planning part of law. They're talking about cases and tax issues and things. Nobody in this room has a client that even closely fits
right.
and will use any of it, but everybody needs the credits anyway. So it's all BS.
Right.
So
we all go for the credits. You know, we all go for the credits, but I hope it seems interesting enough. You know, I just did it for my wife's firm. It's funny. She says to me, you know, you left all the interesting stuff till the end. And then
she practices too.
She does insurance defense. I actually met her back in the, while in the industry. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Another reason why I'm pretty happy I had spent some time in, Lawton Squires. You know what I met her? I met her Lawton Squires, who was at Hertzfeld Rubin, was doing a CLE.
Okay.
Doing a CLE, and I met her at that CLE class.
That's funny. That's a long time.
She wouldn't stop hitting on me. I don't know why.
You know, you're a good looking guy, Bill. And then, and you have two kids, you said?
Yeah, son and a daughter.
How old are they now?
He's 18, and she's a junior in high school.
Oh, yeah. So mine's 20 and 17. Actually, I have a third one who's 14, 15.
Well, he's going to Michigan, but he doesn't start till January. And it's ridiculous. I mean, this COVID thing, and you know, that's a whole
part. I know. It's got to be hard. My son is a junior at Indiana, so Big Ten. Go Big Ten. And he's in his apartment all the time. There's no yeah. classes to go. I could imagine your son starts as a freshman in his dorm. How the hell do you learn?
But what they're doing this weekend at Michigan, all the kids were at Ohio State because you can party at Ohio State.
Oh, because the rules are different.
Correct. So Indiana and Ann Arbor lockdown. So the kids are all fine.
Indiana's tight. As a matter of fact, they had an event at my son's fraternity house. It wasn't even a party. It was like the brotherhood got together, but there were more kids in the room than there were supposed to be. Right. Somebody got a pizza delivered, and the guy was the delivery guy, was from another fraternity, called the university. They got shut down, thrown off a campus, and they're on probation for 2 years.
Right.
No party, no beer, no booze. No, that had nothing to do with it.
So what they're doing is, so he's a freshman, starts in January, but we had to get him an apartment. So you spoke, I wanted to live on camp, but you can't because dorm housing is like prison.
Yeah. It's like a prison, right? You can't, you're in your own room. You can't leave the room.
Right. But the apartment buildings are under different rules. So it's just, these kids lost out on a horrible senior year, and now it's a freshman year. And that's why it's so politicized, because you know how I can tell, this is where I'm confused about what's going on. Not that we're getting off topic, but we quit.
A little bit, but that's okay. Yeah, we got
it's still interesting. Listen, it's interesting stuff. Here's what kills me about, I don't know what information is real. I have no trusted resources other than some strong contacts in the medical community. But here's where you see how messed up the situation is. And I would have cursed there, but I don't know if it's G-rated or not.
It's not like on HBO.
When you watch football, now let me tell you this too. Let me throw this into the mix. I'm the president of my school board. I'm also a varsity football coach. So I'm very much involved in what we're doing with schools and remote and everything else. You watch football, watch college and professional football, watch games like in New York, where not only nobody's in the stands.
Right.
When you see games in South Carolina or Kansas City or these other cities, there's 10, 15, 20,000 people in the stands. So you're trying to think this is the most horrible thing up there.
No, it's because nobody believes anything. They have their own rules.
Right. I don't think if anybody believes it, but people have different ways of triaging and prioritizing what we can or can't do.
What's the word? They're COVID exhausted.
Right. Exhausted, you know, New York State, no more. Listen, I just think if I want to wear a mask and social distance, I can go to a movie theater. So open up the movie theaters. Why can't I do that? I don't mind wearing a mask.
They're not open in New York?
No, he just opened them up last week for 25%. That won't cover their overhead.
I know. Won't even pay their utilities to be on.
New York State is in major, major
way. And there's going to be a spike too. So then he's going to shut other shit down.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And you know what I'm saying? There's no money to cover this. So there's a 20% cut in all our schools in New York already. How much worse will it be unless these stores bring them? People don't realize when you go to that dry cleaner, when you buy that sandwich, when you go into that restaurant, that tax dollars goes to the state that pays for the things that you need. So I don't know if it's political or not that Cuomo and de Blasio just want, maybe they're just trying to destroy the economy until after the election. Then they'll open things up. So Biden, I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I don't know. It's not sustainable with what we're doing now financially. And listen, my 87-year-old mother lives with us. So I know how important it is to keep COVID out of the house, to take precautions. So I'm balancing that safety issue with making sure that we can all.
That's the problem. It's a balancing. There was never any coordinated effort where all the governors said, listen, we got to talk once a week. Let's figure out how to keep the economy going, work with people, keep them safe. But, you know, eventually, if we're all out of business anyway, what the fuck does it matter?
Correct. What's going to be left when it's over?
People are getting crushed in the machinery. That's what happens in life. Yeah. And, you know, it's not fair that Target and Amazon and Whole Foods and Walmart, and they're all making money, and the little guys are getting crushed.
Amazon is just killing it. I mean, it's just amazing. Why would you buy from anywhere but Amazon? I think, I don't know, it's weird, right?
You push, you do a search for anything, Amazon always comes up first.
And it comes the next day. Like, is it like, right, like Starship, Star Trek?
Are they just
flipping it to your house?
I get stuff sometimes the same day.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know? There was a comedian that talked about that, where they talked about Prime, you know, Amazon Prime. This would be like Amazon Prime now, where you get it now. And then it'll be like Amazon before. Like, they'll get it to you before you think you need it. And you're just thinking about it. You're like, you know, I was thinking of, oh, look, there it is, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, there's that movie. What's that movie? That's social media network. Yeah, my wife's saying we have to watch on Netflix or something like this.
Oh, no, that's the one about how they manipulate you. It's a documentary, right?
Well, they're interviewing 5,000 hit points. So the idea is they know what my wife's going to order before she
absolutely
does.
Absolutely.
He's just waiting around the corner. He knows that by November 3rd, Allie's going to order this, so they're going to have it delivered.
Exactly. It's like a drug dealer who knows your patterns around the corner. But so, Bill, you know, one of the reasons I brought you on here today was I want to hear some like cool stories about stuff you've had to deal with and go through as an investigator. That's what everybody wants to hear, right?
Well, we could talk about, you know, the problem with you New Jersey people is we have the...
You do investigations in New Jersey too?
We're New York based, but we do it nationwide.
Okay. So you got people all over that you can tap into when you need them.
Yeah. And we do over all the world also. I mean, we work in Latin America, Europe, Russia, Asia, wherever the work needs to be done. But that work is just
like retired MI6 agents, you know, things like that.
Typically, I'm most comfortable working with ex-law enforcement military around the world.
Okay, cool.
So much of what's out there on people now, 60 to 70% of what we do is due diligence, gathering information about people, organizations.
Right.
And a lot of that you could just do from anywhere, really.
Right. You don't need to go. Right. It's because everything's so available nowadays. But how do you connect with these guys, like former SEALs or?
Well, I got to tell you, that was the advantage of having worked for an international company for 3 years. So I developed a network. I am very much impressed by, I think, again, being a team sports guy and a varsity football coach, the mentality of people in law enforcement and the military is very much about the brother and sisterhood. So they live by honor. So I don't have to pay a guy up front. He doesn't ask me up front. You know,
right. You don't worry about that.
Your bond.
Right.
We all belong to similar organizations. You're accountable to others. They understand what the word accountability means, something we've lost sense of in this society, pointing their fingers at everybody else. So
right.
In that aspect of it, it's pretty extensive in how you're able to rely upon each other to create that network. So I don't have to open up an office in Dubai or in
right. London
or in Brazil, because you have a network that allows you to do the work when you need it. And again, the work that you need there is typically not the complex nature work. I need something obtained, a picture, information, a visual. So you can kind of manage it all from here and
right.
still have them gather the information and do the analysis and direct them where you want. So,
well, 30 years ago, it might've been harder, right?
Yeah. I always think how my dad or people would leave their office at 5 o'clock and you had no way of contacting them. There was no cell phone.
No, work ended. You went home.
Machines. That was it. You were done. And yet
it wasn't so bad though. It was
they still survived. They still had houses, put their kids through college and somehow didn't have to work, 80 hours a week.
I know, but everything's different. The world works at such a fast pace. I got attorneys. Like my uncle's he's older than me. He's a lawyer. There was a time when we were getting emails, where he didn't want an email address because he knew how fast things would come in to the office to give a response. Somebody sends you an email. They're like, Bill, are you there? How come you're not responding to me? What? And you can't, the flow coming in speeds up. You're still a human being. You can only respond so fast to your clients.
Right. Well, I do like now. I mean, one thing's having COVID. I always enjoyed working from home when I could. So I enjoy working the weekends at night because maybe I want to take my daughter for a bike ride during the day.
Right.
So I used to love when I would send emails to clients at 10 o'clock at night to the associate. And they'd be like, stop emailing us at 10 o'clock at night. You make us look bad. The great thing about COVID is people are like, don't we get shit anymore? Now it's like Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 o'clock. Everyone realizes that because so many more people work from home. They're seeing the fact that, listen, I control my own schedule. As long as I always tell people, manage your employees' work, not their time. What do you care where they're doing?
Absolutely.
You gave them this work to. If they've met their checklist of work, what are you busting their chops for? The work's getting done.
Because now they're working to live when we also used to live to work.
Right. And as a manager, you should only be concerned with doing the work. So if it's just like when Johnny was in the office. Like Johnny leaves early on Friday, you're mad at him. I don't know. Did Johnny do all his work? Yeah. Okay. Then what are you mad at him for?
Right.
If Johnny has free time and he's made his calls, he's done his bill.
What does he need to be sitting in the office for if there's nothing for him to do?
And if he is, it's your fault. Give him, say, instead of making 10 calls a week, make 20 calls a week. Put that on him then. But don't get mad at him if he's met those points just because he's not doing it. So that's like I said to you before. Should I wear a suit today? I'm not wearing a suit. And work product is what matters. People get so caught up
results.
In the thing. And look at all the people leaving New York City. All my clients, like, I'm not keeping my office in the city.
Right. You know why?
What am I paying that rent for? What am I having this one? We don't have to be doing it here. That's just more money that I have to spend, that I have to increase my billable rate to my client. Now I reduce that. Now I can charge my client a more reasonable
rate. I don't know what's going to happen with these big cities. There's going to be this urban sprawl of like workers, not just housing, where people are like, well, I can have an office in my house. I could go in one day a week, 2 days a week. I don't know, need to go in at all. I've seen companies go totally virtual and then people just move wherever they want to move.
And I've seen other ones, you know, they had 30,000 square feet. They're like, lease is ending. One guy just told me last week, they were going to go from 15 to like 30. They're going down to 8.
There you go.
And we're going to say, have people in. When you want to go in, go in. There's your space. You want to collaborate, go in.
I would not want to be like a mogul in the real estate business owning office space. You better think of an alternate plan, you know?
And unless some people want to come in, it's opportunities for others. I think overall, people are going to realize it's changing the way people view things and the dynamics of it. So I think that's going to make a difference. So,
yeah, I don't know what though. It'll shake itself out like it always does.
Always does.
So any crazy stories?
Well, I have the dentist who liked to meet with a dominatrix at a hotel. Nice guy.
And why were you investigating? Because his wife found out about it or something?
Mitch, you want to tell the story? Can I tell the story? You want to sit back and relax, big guy? You want to take the punchline out of this?
Oh, I love
it. So his position was that he never engaged in any intimacy with her. He just liked to be suffering the consequences of a victim of a dominatrix.
Is that what a dominatrix is? Like she whips you and stuff like that?
I'm sorry, don't have a degree in expertise in domination.
I figured you saw the picture, so you knew kind of what was happening.
And you protest too much to act like you don't really know what's going on.
It's probably better, you're right.
My understanding is in that world of bondage and so forth, whatever issues individuals have, that was an enjoyment they had, was being made to suffer the consequence, you know, suffer the experience of someone dominating them. But then when he tried terminating that, he then suffered the blackmail of that young lady
who
then threatened to tell his family.
You don't really think about that on the other end. Right. You're like, well, you know. You dip your wick into the wrong pot bucket, and then somebody's like, "Up."
He didn't dip. By the way, let's be so clear: he did not engage in any sexual activity with her. He was just
right. It was more of an embarrassment thing. It wasn't going to ruin his marriage.
Him. There were a lot of multiple issues in there. So when she started blackmailing him, that's when his attorneys got me involved. For some reason, unless they know me directly, they go through the attorneys first. So we kind of call that our Ray Donovan type of services, jokingly. So
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, although who knows who's reading this podcast?
Is that coming back, Ray Donovan?
Now it's fine. And even
it's done.
He actually came out. What's the actor's name?
Liam Neeson. Right.
So he
Liev Schreiber. He's a Jew.
Yeah. And he as soon as they cut the show, he made a plea for the fans to keep it going. And I thought some other network would pick it up, but so far it has not.
Six seasons, right? We got through six seasons.
Yeah. A little dark. The show's very dark, but situation, though, really what I really do for a living, Mitch, is I'm really a life coach. I really am. So it's my job to motivate people. So in this situation, I had to contact that young lady and motivate her to do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's really what it came
to.
So many times we have situations like that. We had to motivate her to do the right thing, which with proper due diligence and research on who she was and what was involved in her life, we made her realize there was better places to go where she'd face less resistance than my particular client at that time.
Right.
Although one of the other things I tried telling my client was, listen, just tell your wife. I mean, you didn't
engage. Oh, was that part of it? That was the blackmail. Well, right?
Sometimes in blackmail situations, you realize coming clean takes away that leverage someone has.
Of course.
So I said to him, listen, if you really didn't engage in sexuality, it'll be a strange thing to explain to her. But you know, then again, listen, if that's such a big part of your life, you haven't told your wife anyway. You probably got
other issues.
You got bigger issues anyway. I tell people all the time, because I hate dealing with the matrimonial cases, they're the worst ones to have. So I tell people all the time, listen, if you think it's not right.
It's not.
You know, it's right. I mean, you could put.
If it's something you need to hide from your spouse, I don't care what you're doing. If it's really not being.
Correct.
It's not right. Even though maybe it's not just, you know, whatever. You're not cheating.
And that's
on
just one hiding thing. I guess, you know, some guys may hide that they bet $100 a week. I'm talking about something that's that important to you that you couldn't explain to your wife or your spouse. Typically, in my experience, that's not going to end up being a successful relationship. I've always felt, you know, that full disclosure and transparency. Not only do I believe in that in my marriage, and I think it's why it's successful, but that's what helps me in business. People realize when they're doing business with each other, they have to be transparent. Madoff taught us that. So we do so much due diligence work with people before they do business with someone or merge with someone or hire someone, says, hey, I got to know everything about this person. You know, we got to make sure that what we're getting is what they're advertising to us. So that always becomes a big factor for us.
So did she kind of see it your way?
They all do. mission. we had another client who leased property to people all over the country.
Okay.
So they had a contract to have a certain item. I'm trying to keep out details just.
Yeah, of course. This was residential property or commercial property?
It was a consumer product that they would have. They would use it for a few months and then turn it back in and get a new product. And then the idea was to just rotate out the product.
Okay.
Problem was, a whole lot of problems with that model. But nonetheless, after 3 or 4 months of the product, they didn't turn it back in. So I would contact them, and they'd be all over the country. They could be in Las Vegas.
So there's a lot of people that weren't turning it back in.
Not a lot, but there's enough so that my firm was retained to address the issue nationwide. Okay. And I would contact them, and they could be a guy named Mitch. And I'd say, hey, Mitch.
A little bit of a collections issue, basically.
Yeah, but not collections because it wasn't,
Well, you're there to collect their item and take it back for your client.
Right, but when you get into collections, there's kinds of different laws and restrictions on what you're doing.
Right, you got to go to court.
This case was probably difficult. Law enforcement would probably not get involved. They would argue.
It's a civil matter, right.
Civil matter. Now, my understanding in New York State is if you lease a car and you don't turn the car back in, there's a specific statute that makes that a theft. But for this product—
You mean the lease is up.
Lease is up. You don't return back the car. You could argue it's civil. Well, this was the same thing, but there was no statute. So for the most part, you weren't going to get the assistance of law enforcement.
Okay.
So I would email a guy out there. I'd call Mitch in Vegas or Montana or Chicago, or wherever. I'd say, hey, it's, Bill Baum, I'm here on behalf of so-and-so client. We'd like to have that product returned. They'd either ignore me or they'd be like, yeah, whatever. This guy in New York's not getting this product back from me and hang up the phone on me. Then, of course, I would then involve either, back into my motivational roles and life coach. So then I would have my guys around the country show up. And the best thing was, I looked at this like a criminal matter now. That's my perspective.
Well, they stole your client's property.
And now some could argue in court later civil, but for purposes of staying ethical and with the parameters of what we're entitled and allowed to do, you have to be very careful about what method you use and employ and so forth. So for that purpose, we had to find leverage on these individuals. So I remember one of the best ones I had was, so let's say I had to reach this guy, Mitch, and this guy was a Wall Street guy, just an arrogant guy. And the client, this is the other thing I don't like. If you're a client, don't do things that I'm going to have to do it because I have a methodology to how I do it. So they would call these people and it wouldn't work. They would then retain me to do it. But that took away my ability to do certain things.
The arrogant guy was your client, not the...
So this guy Mitch had to. We'll just use your name because it's this guy Joe had a watch out in Vegas, right? And he worked in Wall Street. And the client kept calling him to get the watch back, and he was just being enough. But he knew they were calling, so I finally got the case, and I called up, and his desk partner answered the phone. So the guy who had the watch was Mitch, let's say, and this guy Joe worked with him. So Joe answered his phone. I go, hey, this is Bill Baum, and I'm calling on behalf of so-and-so, naming the client. So this guy knew who the company was because they called too often. Goes, oh, he's not here right now. All right, well, let me ask you, who's his supervisor? Who's his boss? So he gave me his boss's name. His boss's name was, let's say, Sally. Sally was the boss of my target. So I would call Sally, and I'd say, hey, Sally, my name's Bill Baum. I'm calling on behalf of, so-and-so. Could you ask Mitch to give me a call? So she would go into the guy's office. Hey, Mitch, this guy Belmont's trying to reach you. Give him a call. So now this guy Mitch is like, holy shit, did they call my boss and tell my boss I'm going to return the product? But I didn't tell the boss that. So he'd call me up in a second here, realizing, I'm a nice guy, right? What do you mean? I didn't tell Sally why I called. I just asked her to have you call me. Now you're having a phone call with me.
Right.
I'm asking you to understand there's a lot of different ways I'm going to have to get this product back. Next day, the guy sends it back.
No, of course.
One guy got so mad, he goes, I'm going to call the FCC on you. All right.
Go ahead.
Not really sure what the FCC
is going to do with this.
They didn't have a point like that. So other times, some guys in some states that I would utilize were really strategic. One guy took my letter. It was a short letter just asking the product back. And he would scotch tape it like all over the windshield of the guy's car, onto his house. I had one guy that worked as a jeweler. It was the same thing. He was an actual jeweler. Employee of a company. It was the same thing. I called him up and got his boss to have him give me a call, and he sent it back the next day. See, there's two kinds of people in those situations in life. There's those people that are either being lazy or being kind of Adam Henry's, AH, if you know what that stands for. And they're just not being asses. and not returning it, that kind of thing. There's other people that screwed up. They sold it for drugs, prostitution. They don't have it anymore, in which case I'm not going to get it back. There you have to pursue civil action. So the hope is in these type of situations that you can make your client whole in the least cost amount, and those are the people, those are people I've loved. Other people I know right away, they don't have the watch because I've gotten to a point where I put them in such a difficult spot that they would much rather, when you know that they would rather give up the watch than suffer the consequences of what you're proposing for them and they don't do it, you know,
they don't have it.
They don't have it. Right. And at that point, you just have to begin civil action or we enter into a payment plan for those people. So those are the fun parts of, you know, those are the fun parts of the job when you have those type of situations. And then you have surveillances too. We had a surveillance years ago where a guy from Jersey was stealing information from the client, and the client knew, had information on what day the guy was going to leave the office early to meet with someone. And so we had, that time we had a lot. We had like three cars and six guys in Jersey, and he left the office and he headed to the turnpike. And this was years ago. But as he turned to the handbrake, I remember he pulls into the gas station and pops his hood to check his oil. Like, who the hell checks their oil anymore? Cars go 20,000 miles.
Right, you don't check your oil. I didn't even know how to check my oil.
I'm like thinking, shit, you know, everybody check, make sure you have gas. Because we had no idea. We thought we were going maybe to New York City around the corner. I'm like, make sure you have gas and cash, which is one of the things you have to do in this event. So you have to bring change of outfits. You bring food.
Because you don't know how long you're going to be on this.
How long? Even in New York City, I always tell guys, people are so oblivious. I could be behind you all day long. You'd never know.
Oh, really? You'd think, like when you're watching TV, a show, right? You're like, how could they not see this guy following him? But they don't. They're oblivious.
And one of my guys who's so good at this, he always thinks he's being there. I'm like, no, they don't see you. You're fine. People are oblivious. First of all, people are oblivious for the most part. Now everyone's on their phone anyway.
Right. So for the They're very distracted.
So we do have camera surveillances that we do too. And some things are being followed. We'll follow them to see who might be following them and so forth.
Oh,
and
there's techniques
and things you can do to find out very easily if someone's following you and so forth. So, and for the truth is, if reality is, if someone is trying to see if you're following them, it's very difficult in a car to follow someone if they think you're following, at least with one car. We had three cars in this case. Well, needless to say, this guy gets in the turnpike and about 8 hours later, we're in a hotel in Virginia.
You're kidding.
Right. So imagine blowing that case. Imagine the billables on that.
Yeah. Wow.
So again, we followed him to the person he met with. And then it was important to follow the person he met with to get their license plate to know who they were.
Right.
So people, you know, people all the time think, oh, surveillance is easy. Really? A surveillance in New York City is easy? Or out in Somerset County, New Jersey, where it's very, very rural, out where Forbes lives. You think you can sit on a street there and nobody's going to notice you?
Right. People are going to call the police.
What do you do when someone comes up to your car? Well, if you say, okay, you're, you know, investigators can be there. Before you get to a town, you call up the local PD, let's say in Bridgewater, Raritan.
Yeah,
hey,
tell them that I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm in town. I'm working the case and so forth. Then you have to be sure it's not too small a town where they go and tell the neighbors.
They could, right?
They could, but for the most part, you know, again, you develop a rapport with law enforcement and you speak that language and you handle yourself well. But then you're sitting on the street. And I remember one guy used to say when the neighbors would come out, he'd be like, oh, yeah, we're here to protect one of your neighbors. There's a workplace violence situation. I'm like, you're an idiot. That neighbor's going to tell every other neighbor what you just told them. And they're going to be like, and everyone's going to be paying attention to you. You got to come up. We have other cover stories we utilize just to tell neighbors something like, oh, that's good. You know, bird watching or an environmental study or something.
Right.
And they go back and they don't think twice about it. So you can sit on a street and not be open and obvious to people like that. So, but again, New York City is very hard. You know, we have one in Brooklyn right now. We're doing right now. Guys come out of an apartment building. If you don't have a photo, you're in trouble. So you hope to get a photo. And when the guy comes out, nobody ever wants to pay a lot of money. Like, oh, put one guy. Okay, I'll put one guy. But do you want that guy in a car or on foot? What do you mean? Well, you said you want one person. You sent me off to this location in Brooklyn. Do you want my guy in a car or do you want him on foot? What do you mean, Bill? Very simple, sir, Mr. Client. You said you only want one guy, car or foot. Because if I'm in a car and he comes out and goes into the subway or— I can't follow him.
Or if he gets in a car and you're on foot, can't follow him either.
Correct. So, you know, typically in the five boroughs, you really need to be, unless you know the person's pattern, you need to be two people. So one can jump out of the car depending upon the mode of transportation.
Right.
But Google Maps are great. Now you just says, Google Map it. What do you mean? Google Map it. Let's look at the address together. You tell me where you'd like me to set up in this house where, you know, it's all over the place. So there's other techniques and things you could do. And there's some technology. I can't wait till we can start using drones. I could just sit home here.
You're not allowed to use drones?
Well, you know, the FAA now compliant. You have to have drones that meet the FAA, and the technology is not really. I mean, people do it for security. They do it to watch property. Farmers do it to check their land. Instead of going out with the ATV now and going all around, you could just send your drone out there and see what the whole thing looks like.
Right, but it's on your own property. You can do whatever you want.
And then you know, you should probably see in the neighborhoods every now and then some kid throws up a drone and so forth. But for an extended surveillance, it would be difficult to really make sure you're following on the streets and where they're going and stuff. But I'm sure that day's coming too. We have cameras everywhere in the city. So,
yeah, eventually you'll have a drone that's so good it can be up real high. You can't see it and it can
still zoom down.
Hopefully zoom down.
Listen, exactly. LPR is another thing. The technology's out there, license plate readers. So if I'm looking for Mitch and I can't find him and I know what his license plate is, I could put it into these systems. And if his car went past one of these license plate readers, they'll say, yeah, every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, we happen to see Mitch's car by such and such an area. And that can narrow down the focus of where we're trying to look for someone. So
where are license plate readers, like in toll booths and stuff, or
in toll booths? You know, they're in different places. They're around.
Interesting.
But that's, you know, but again, access we get in our industry is because we're licensed and we're audited. So I have access to DMV records. So it used to be that someone's used DMV as a dating service. Oh, that person's cute. Let me run the license plate and give them a call. Or you'd have the marital disputes where they'd run a person's license plate so they can assassinate the boyfriend or girlfriend. So every bit of
it. That's not good.
No, that's not good. But the way we overcome that now is, one, you have to be licensed just to get access to it, and you have to be vetted by the DMV. And then they'll arbitrarily and randomly during the year audit me and say, hey, you ran this guy, this gal, what's the reason for it? Demonstrate that for us. So there's a lot more measures in place now to make sure we're protecting the information that's so readily available. But again, it's readily available because it's for justifiable purposes and so forth.
All right. Well, that's cool. So if people need work from you, we'll put some links in the show notes to where you are out in Long Island, and you're available pretty much all over the country, right? So anybody listening to this can in the world. So if somebody in Australia listens to it, or Vancouver, London, they can call you.
Mitch, if you take a map and you throw a dart, I got a guy. I got a guy.
Like Papua New Guinea? You got a guy there?
Hey, let me just tell me a great one. I have a buddy of mine who's an attorney. He wanted me to track this witness down. I said, bro, he's in Brooklyn. No, he's in Ireland. I'm telling you he's in Brooklyn. Now he's in Ireland. Okay, we'll go to Ireland. Witness, he needed to cooperate. Doesn't listen. So
he pays for you to go to Ireland?
No, not me. I have my guy in Ireland.
But
you reach out to your guy
in Ireland.
But it was a movie. My guy, I would have loved to go to Ireland. By the way, if anybody has a case in Iceland, my wife and I want to go to
Reykjavik.
Iceland. I would like to have a case in Iceland, and I'm happy to go on it. They're
not big supporters of Israel, by the way. They just passed a law, something about like anti-circumcision or something. I don't think they're big Jewish supporters in Iceland.
You can't get circumcised in Iceland?
There's some rule, that some law they passed. Yeah. It's not good.
I think it's
disappointing because it's a great country.
I think people do it now for medical reasons that you're supposed to.
I think it's an anti-Semitic type of thing.
Well, that's interesting.
Too bad.
Yeah, because my doctor needed to use like a huge blade when I was defy that theory right there.
So I got off the topic, but
we go to Ireland. So my guy.
But you still know the guy's in Brooklyn, right? Even though you.
I believe he's in Brooklyn, but listen, okay. I document. I think he's in Brooklyn. So my guy in Ireland has to go like by plane. It's like a movie. He says, "Bill, I had to go from a little skip plane to a jeep to a boat to get to this remote area where supposedly this guy's." So he knocks on the door. The daughter answers. He says, nah, my dad's in Brooklyn.
Right. After all
she calls her dad. My dad then calls the client. What are you doing in my house? What are you knocking my house for? I'm in Brooklyn. So I said to my client, if he doesn't cooperate anymore, it'll be because you went and knocked on his door.
Now you know he's going to cooperate because you're knocking on his door in Ireland.
No, it was the opposite. He was supposed to be a friendly witness. So he wasn't so happy.
Oh, so, I got it. Okay.
So he ever thinks it too. He thinks of, you could do 30 hours of surveillance on someone and never see them and hope for that one day. So we get these budgets like for 4 or 5 hours sometimes. Like, now, it's like you have a better chance winning lotto than hoping on this one particular day during this one 4 or 5 hour period, we're actually going to end up identifying that person they're looking for. So.
Yeah. So it could be expensive to do that stuff because you got to sit there and sit there and sit there and chase them and take a plane to a boat, to a jeep.
It does. But in a lot of cases, sometimes knowing about a person's background is important. It could be millions of dollars. Personal injury cases, you know, they could be millions of dollars. It could be a $10 million demand on someone's injury. And if they're out there shoveling snow or working on a roof or playing basketball, having video of that is worth millions and millions of dollars. So
that's true. You're
investing with someone and their characters in question, and they're meeting with people they shouldn't be meeting with. And that's why our due diligence profiles include social media news articles. I've had cases where just getting Mitch's podcast or Mitch's statements or Mitch's comments in the news defies the views economically or politically or from a business standpoint of what the actual client's thinking of. And that was alone to make him no longer a viable candidate. So it wasn't a criminal record or a lawsuit. It was just simply the views being expressed were inconsistent with what we were told in an interview or in the philosophies of the company. So when we do due diligence profiles, which I guess we don't have time to talk, but they, you know, a regular background check could be $300-$400. Ours can go anywhere from $1,500 to $5,000 because they're so extensive in the information you're gathering and obtaining on individuals. And again, in the US, that information is much more readily available than Ireland or Iceland or anywhere else. You know, other places in the world, it's just much more difficult. Much more difficulty in obtaining that information.
More expensive,
more time consuming and more expensive.
Interesting. All right, Bill. Well, I appreciate coming on and sharing what you do. And
if you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.